and are afraid of the wild beasts on the mountain, and you are to go crying at the gates of the lair. When they let you in, then, say you are a farmer's son from the valley beyond, and you came up the mountain to look for birds, and you do not see how swiftly the night came down, and you are lost, and beg a nice shelter from this temple. If they will not let you stay, then beg them at least for a guide to the pass, and use your eyes. See everything, and see how many men there are, and how many guns, and what the leopard is like, and tell me everything. Can you be so brave as this? Wong the tiger fixed his two black eyes on the youth, and he saw the lad's ruddy face turn pale, so that the pock stood out like scars on the skin. But he spoke up well enough, and he said, although somewhat breathless, "I can do it." "I have never asked you anything," said Wong the tiger sternly. "But perhaps your clownishness can be of some use now. If you are lost, and do not use your wits, or if you betray yourself, it is your own fault. But you have that merry, silly face, and I know you look more simple than you are, and so I have chosen you. But play the part of a simple, witless lad, and you are safe enough. If you are caught, can you be brave enough to die and be silent?" Then the good red came surging back into the boy's face, and he stood there sturdy and strong in his coarse clothes of blue cotton, and he said, "Try me, my captain." Then Wong the tiger was pleased with him, and he said, "Brave lad, it is the test, and if you do well, you are worthy to move higher." And he smiled a little as he stared at the boy, and his heart, that so seldom moved at anything except his gusts of anger, now moved a little toward this boy. Yet not for the boy's sake either, for he did not love him, but it moved with some vague yearning, and he wished again he might have a son of his own. Not like this lad either, but a strong, true, grave son of his own. So he bade the boy put on such clothes as a farmer's son wears, and girdle a towel about his waist, and he had him put on old, worn shoes on his bare feet, for he had a long way to go and rough rocks to clamber over. The lad made a little sling then, such as all boys have, and made out of the small forked branch of a tree, and when it was made he ran lightly down the mountainside, and he disappeared into the woods. Then during the 2 days he was gone, Wong the tiger ordered his men as he planned he would, and he apportioned out the work to them all, so that none could be idle and mischievous. He sent his trusty men out into the countryside to buy food, and he sent them separately, and they bought meat and grains in small quantities, so that none might suspect they bought for 100 men. When the evening of the second day was come, Wong the tiger went out, and he looked down the rocky steps to see if the lad was come. Deep in his heart he feared for the lad, and when he thought of him perhaps cruelly dead, he found some strange compassion and remorse in his heart, and as night came on and the new moon rose, he looked toward the Double Dragon Mountain, and he thought to himself, "I should have sent a man I could spare, perhaps, and not my own brother's son. If he is cruelly dead, how shall I meet my brother? Yet I could only trust my own blood, too." He watched on after his men slept, and the moon came clear of the mountains and swung high in the heavens, but still the lad did not come. At last the night wind grew very chill, and Wong the tiger went in, and his heart was heavy, because he found what he had not known before, that he would miss the lad a little if he never came back, because he had such merry, tricky ways, and he could not be angered. But in the small, late hours of the night, as he lay awake, he heard a little beating on the gate, and he rose himself, and in haste he went out. There the lad was when Wong the tiger had drawn away the wooden bar, and he looked very weary and spent, but still good-humored. He came limping in, and his trousers were torn from his thigh, and blood had streamed down his leg and dried, but he was still in high humor. "I am back, uncle," he cried in a spent small voice, and Wong the tiger laughed suddenly and silently in the way he had, if he were truly pleased, and he said roughly, "What have you done to your thigh?" But the lad answered lightly, "It is nothing." Then Wong the tiger made one of the few jokes he ever made in his life, because he was so pleased, and he said, "I hope the leopard did not claw it." The lad laughed aloud at this, for he knew his uncle meant it for laughter, and he sat down on the step into the temple, and he said, "No, he did not. I fell upon a briary tree, for the moss is damp with dew and slippery, and the tree scratched me like this. I am starving, uncle." "Come and eat, then," said Wong the tiger. "Eat and drink and sleep before I hear your tale." And he told the lad to come into the hall and sit down, and he roared out for a soldier to bring food and drink for the ones to serve this lad. But the noise of it woke this man and that, and one after the other waked, and they came crowding into the court lit by the light of the high moon, and they all wanted to hear what the lad had seen. Then Wang the tiger, seeing how after the lad had eaten and drunk, that he was so important and excited with the success of his venture that he was far from sleep, and seeing that dawn was now near, he said, "Tell it all now, then, and afterwards go to your sleep." So the boy sat on the altar before the Buddha whose face was covered, and he said, "Well, and I went, and that mountain is twice as high as this one, uncle, and the lair is in a valley round as a bowl at the top, and I wish we could have it for ours when we take the region. They have houses and everything there like a little village. And I did what you said, uncle. I went crying and limping to the gates at night with my dead birds in my bosom, and some of the birds on that mountain are the strangest, brightest hue. One I struck was bright yellow all over like gold, and I have it yet, it was so pretty." And as he spoke, he drew out of his bosom a yellow bird, and it hung in his hand soft and dead like a handful of limp gold there. Wang the tiger was in all haste to hear the lad's tale, and he chafed at this childishness of a dead bird, but he restrained himself and let the lad tell his tale in his own way. And so the lad went on, and he laid his bird carefully on the altar beside him, and he looked from one face to another of the men who listened to him, and beside him flared the torch Wang the tiger had caused to be lit and thrust into the ashes of the incense urn on that altar. And the lad said, "Well," and when they heard the beating on the gate they came from within, and first they opened a very narrow crack and peered to see who it was. And I cried piteously, and I said, "I am far from my home. I have wandered too far, and the night has come down on me, and I am afraid of the beasts of the wood, and let me come into this temple." Then the one who opened shut the gate again, and he ran and asked someone, and I cried on and moaned as piteously as I could. And here the lad moaned to show them all what he did, and all the men roared with laughter and admired him, and here and there one called out, "The little monkey, the little pocked devil." The lad grinned all over his pocked face with his delight, and he told on, and he said, "They let me in at last, and I was so simple as I could be, and after I had eaten wheaten bread and a bowl of gruel, I pretended to be frightened, and to know where I was, and I began to cry, 'I want to go to my home. I am afraid here because you are the robbers, and I am afraid of the leopard.' And I ran to the gate and wanted to be let out, and I said, 'I would liefer be among wild beasts after all.' Then they all laughed because I was so simple, and they comforted me and said, 'Do you think we will hurt a lad? Wait until morning, and you may go your way in peace.' So I ceased my shivering and crying after a while, and I pretended to be more at ease, and they asked me where I had come from, and I told them the name of a village I had heard was on the other side of the mountain. Then they asked me what I had heard about them, and I said I had heard they were very heroic, fearless men, and their leader not a man, but a man's body with a leopard's head on it. And I said, 'I would like to see him, but I would be afraid, too, to see such a sight.' They all laughed at me then, and one said, 'Come, and I will show you him.' And he led me to a window, and I looked in out of the darkness, and there were torches burning inside, and there the chief sat. He is truly a curious and monstrous fellow, uncle, and his head is wide at the top and slopes at the brow so that he does look like a leopard. And he sat drinking with a young woman. She was very fierce, too, and still she was pretty but fierce. And they drank together from a jug of wine. First he drank, and then she drank.'"
"How many men were there in that place, and what their guns?" asked Wang the tiger.
"Oh, many men, uncle," said the lad earnestly. "Three times our number of fighting men, and many serving men, and there are women, and there are little children running everywhere, and some lads like me. I asked one of them who his father was, and he said he did not know, because they had no separate fathers there, and they only knew their mothers, but not their fathers. And that is a strange thing, too. All the fighting men have guns, but the serving men have only sickles and knives and such homely things. But at the head of the cliffs about the lair, they have great heaps of round rocks, piled to roll down upon any who attack them. And there is only one pass into that lair, for there are cliffs everywhere about it and guards always at the pass. Only the guard slept when I came by, and I crept past him. He slept so that I might have taken his gun, for it lay there on the rock beside him, and he snored so that I might have taken it. But I did not, though I was tempted, for they might have thought I was not what I seemed."
"Did the fighting men seem large and brave?" asked Wang the tiger again.
"Brave enough," replied the lad. "Some were big and some small, but they talked among themselves after they had eaten, and they paid no heed to me, for I stayed with the lads after a while, and I heard them complain against the leopard because he would not divide the spoils according to their law. And he kept so much for himself, and he was greedy with all the pretty women, and he would not let the other men have them until he was tired of them. He did not share as brothers should share, they said, and he held himself too high. Although he was born a common fellow, and he cannot read and write, and they are weary of his highness. Now this pleased Wong the Tiger greatly when he heard it, and he mused on as the lad told his story of this and that, and what he had to eat and how clever he was. And Wong the Tiger mused and planned. And after a while he saw that the lad had told all, and only repeated his words, and searched his brain for a last thing so that he might keep the attention and admiration of the men as long as he could. Then Wong the Tiger rose, and he commended the lad, and bade him go to sleep now, and he told the men to be at their tasks, for it was dawn, and the torch was burned down, and its flickering flame pale in the light of the rising sun. He went into his room then, and he called his trusty men to him, and he said, "I have mused and planned, and I believe I can do this thing without losing a life or a gun, and we must avoid battle, since they are so many more than we are in that lair. The thing to do when one kills a centipede is to crush its head, and then its 100 legs are in confusion, and they run hither and thither against each other, and they are harmless. We will kill the poisonous head of this robber band thus." The men were astounded at such boldness, and the pig butcher said in his loud, coarse way, "Captain, it sounds well, but you must first catch the centipede before you can cut off his head." "So shall I," returned Wong the Tiger, "and here is my plan. You are to help me. We are to garb ourselves very fine and bravely as heroes do, and we will go to the magistrate of this region and say we are braves and wandering soldiers, and that we seek for service under him, secret service as a private guard. And we will give as our pledge that we will kill the leopard for him. He is anxious now for his seat, and he will be eager for our help. Here is the plan. I will tell him he is to pretend truce with the robber, and invite the leopard and the next to him to a mighty feast. Then, when the moment comes, and he can mark it by a wine cup dropped from his hand and shattered, you and I will rush from where we are hidden and fall upon the robbers and kill them. I will have our men scatter through the town secretly everywhere, and they shall fall upon such of the smaller robbers as will not come to my banner. So we will kill this centipede's head, and it is not a thing hard to do." Now all of them saw this thing was feasible, and they were struck with admiration, and they agreed heartily to it. After they had talked a little more of how it would be managed, Wong the Tiger dismissed them, and he called his men into the temple hall. He sent his trusty men to see that the priests were not near where they could hear him, and then he told his gathered men what his plan was. When they heard it, they shouted loudly, "Good, good! Ha! The black-browed tiger!" And Wong the Tiger heard them as he stood there beneath the veiled god, and although he said nothing, and he was very proud and silent and aloof, yet there surged up in him such a deep pleasure in his power that he lowered his eyes and stood there grave among his men. When they were still once more, and waited to hear what else he might tell them, he said, "You are to eat and drink well, and then garb yourselves as commonly as you can, but still as soldiers, and take your guns and scatter yourselves through the city, only not too far from the magistrate's court. When I send out my shrill whistle, you are to come, but wait the number of days until I call." And he turned to his trusty, hair-lipped man, and he said, "Pay every man 5 pieces of silver for wine and lodging and the food he needs." This was done, and every man was content. Then Wong the Tiger called his 3 trusty men to him, and they dressed themselves bravely and concealed short swords in their garments, and they took up their guns, and they all went away together. As for the priests, they rejoiced very much to see these wild fellows go. But when Wong the Tiger saw them rejoicing, he said, "Do not rejoice too soon, for we may come back, but if we can find a better place, we will not." He paid them well, nevertheless, and above what he owed, he gave them a sum, and he said to the abbot, "Mend your roofs, and repair your house, and buy yourselves each a new robe." The priests were overjoyed at such generosity, and the old abbot was somewhat ashamed, and he said, "You are a good man after all, and I shall pray before the gods for you, and how else can I reward you?" To this Wong the Tiger answered, "No, do not trouble yourself with gods, for I have never had faith in them very much.
But if in after days you hear of one called the Tiger, then speak well of him, and say the Tiger treated you well." The old abbot stared and stammered in a daze, and he said he would, and he held the silver clasped preciously against his bosom in his two hands.
Chapter 13. Straight to the city did Wong the Tiger lead his trusty men, and when they were come to it, then straight to the gates of the magistrate's court they went. When Wong the Tiger was come to the gate, he said boldly to the guards that leaned idly against the stone lions there,
"Let me in, for I have something private to say to the magistrate."
Now the guard at the gate demurred, for Wong the Tiger did not show any silver at all, and when Wong the Tiger saw the man's unwillingness, he shouted once, and his trusty men leaped forward and pointed their guns at the man's breast. He turned green-skinned and fell back, and so they passed through, making their shoes clatter upon the stones of the court. There were those idling about the gates who had seen what happened, and not one dared to move against them. Then Wong the Tiger cried roughly and fiercely, and he drew his black brows down over his eyes.
"Where is the magistrate?"
But not a man moved, and when Wong the Tiger saw, he grew suddenly angry, and he took his gun and pricked the man nearest him in the belly, and the man leaped in terror and cried out, "I will take you to him! I will take you to him!" And he ran, pattering ahead, and Wong the Tiger laughed silently to see his terror. So they followed him, and they passed through court after court. But Wong the Tiger did not look east or west. He kept his face straight and furious, and his trusty men did the same thing as much as they could. At last they came to an innermost court, very beautiful, and set out with a pool and a terrace of peonies and some old pine trees. But the lattices of the rooms upon it were drawn down, and there was silence everywhere. The man who led them halted on the threshold and coughed, and a servant came then to the lattice, and he said, "What do you wish? Our lord sleeps." But Wong the Tiger shouted out loudly, and his voice seemed to crash about him in that quiet court,
"Wake him, then, for I have something of greatest importance to tell him. He must wake, for it concerns his very seat."
The servant stared at them uncertainly, but he saw how full of authority was Wong the Tiger's look, and he surmised these men must be messengers from some higher court. He went in then and shook the sleeping old magistrate, and the old man woke out of his dream, and he rose and washed himself and put on his robes, and he went and sat down in his hall, and he told the servant to bring them in. Then Wong the Tiger went in boldly and loudly, and he made a proper obeisance before the old magistrate. But still he did not bow too deeply, nor full of reverence. The old magistrate was full of terror at the fierceness of these men before him, and he rose in haste and invited them to be seated, and he had cakes and wine and fruits brought. And he spoke the usual courteous words that are spoken to a guest, and Wong the Tiger returned the scantest courtesy that he could. At last, when these rites were over, he said plainly,
"We have heard from those above that you, most honorable, are oppressed by robber bands, and we are come to offer our good arms and our skill to help you be rid of them."
Now all this time the old magistrate had been wondering and trembling, and when he heard this he said in his cracked and quavering voice,
"It is true I am so plagued, and I am not a man of arms myself, but a scholar, and I do not know how to deal with such men. It is true I have a general I hire, but he is paid by the state so much whatever he does, and he does not like a battle either, and the people of this region are so willful and foolish that in a battle we do not know whether or not they would take the side of the robbers against the state even. They are so easily angered by a little rightful tax. But who are you, and what your honored surnames, and where the place where your ancestors resided?"
But Wong the Tiger said no more than this,
"We are wandering braves, and we offer our arms where they are needed. We have heard this land is ridden by a pest of robbers, and we have a plan, if you will hire us."
Now whether or not the old magistrate would in common times have listened to strangers like this, none can tell. But it was true that at this time he was very fearful lest his living be taken from him, and he had no son, and he could not at his age hope for another living. He had an old wife and 100 lesser relatives of one sort and another all dependent on him and his place. And in his helpless age his enemies grew strong and greedy, and so he grasped at anything that might deliver him out of his troubles. He lent his ear now, having sent away his servants, except a few for guard, and Wong the Tiger told his plan, and when he had heard it, he seized eagerly upon it. There was only one thing he feared, and it was that if they failed and did not kill the leopard, the robbers would take very bitter revenge. But when Wong the Tiger saw what the old man feared, he said carelessly,
"I can kill a leopard as easily as a cat, and I can cut off his head and let the blood drip, and my hand will not falter, I swear it."
And the old magistrate mused and thought how old he was, and how his own soldiers were weak and cowardly, and it seemed to him there was no other chance for him but this. And he said,
"I see no other way."
Then he called his servants back, and he bade them bring meats and wines and prepare a feast, and he treated Wong the Tiger and his trusty men as honored guests. Wong the Tiger waited then, and he planned with the old magistrate, and they laid every part of their plan very well, and as they planned, they did, in the next few days. The old magistrate sent emissaries to the robber's lair, and he told them to say he was growing old and he was leaving his post, and another would come to take his place. But before he left, he wished to make sure that no enmity stayed after him, and he wished the leopard and his chiefs would come and dine and feast with them, and he would recommend them to the new magistrate. When the robbers heard this, they were wary. But Wong the Tiger had thought of this also, and he told the magistrate to spread rumors everywhere that he was going away. The robbers asked among the common people, therefore, and they heard the same story. So they believed it then, and they felt it would be a good thing if the new magistrate could be influenced in their favor, and fear them and pay the sums they demanded, and it would spare them battle. They accepted the truce the old magistrate held out to them, and they sent word they would come upon a certain night when the moon was dark. Now it happened that on that day rains fell, and the night was dark and full of mists and winds. But the robbers held to their word, and they came in their best robes, and with their weapons sharp and clean and bright, and every man held his sword drawn and glittering in his hand. The courts were filled with the guard they brought, and some stood out in the streets about the gates to guard against treachery. But the old magistrate did his part very well, and if his withered old knees shook in his robes, still he kept his face peaceful and his voice courteous, and he caused all weapons among his own men to be put aside. And when the robbers saw no weapons except their own, they were more at ease. The old magistrate had caused the best sort of feast to be prepared by his own cooks, and this feast was to be spread forth for the chiefs in the innermost hall, but the robber guards were to be fed in the courts. Now when all was ready, the old magistrate led the chiefs to the hall of feasting, and he assigned the seat of honor to the leopard, and after many refusals and bows of courtesy, the leopard took it, and the old magistrate sat in the host seat. But he had taken care before to have it near a door, for he planned when the moment came for him to throw down his wine bowl as a signal that he would escape and hide until all was over. So the feast began, and at first the leopard drank cautiously and glowered if any of his chiefs drank too easily, but the wine was very good, the best good wine of all that region, and the meats that were brought in were cunningly seasoned to make men thirsty, and they were such meats as the robbers had never tasted, who knew only their rough, coarse fare. Such hot and delicate dishes they had not dreamed of, for they were from birth but coarse fellows, and unused to any dainties. At last their reserve gave way, and they ate and drank fully and recklessly, and so their guards did also in the courts, and the more easily they, since they were not even so wise as their chiefs. Now Wong the Tiger and his trusty men watched from a curtain round a latticed window near the door through which they were to charge. Every man held his sword drawn and ready, and they listened for the crash of the porcelain wine bowl which was to be their sign. There came a moment when the feast had lasted 3 hours or more, and it was a moment when the wine flowed at its freest, and the servants bustled here and there, and the robbers were full of meat and wine, and heavy with all they had in their bellies. Suddenly the old magistrate began to tremble, and his face turned ashy, and he faltered out, "The strangest pain has struck my heart." He lifted his wine bowl in all haste, but his hand shook so that the delicate thing seemed to shiver out of his hand and fell upon the tiles, and he staggered up and out of the door. Then, before they could draw a breath in surprise, Wong the Tiger blew his whistle, and he shouted once to his men, and they charged through the door upon the robber chiefs, and each trusty man sprang upon the one whom Wong the Tiger had already appointed to him. But the leopard Wong the Tiger kept for himself to kill. Now the servants had been told that when they heard the shout, they were to bar every door. And when the leopard saw this, he leaped to his feet and dashed to the door through which the old magistrate had staggered. But Wong the Tiger sprang upon him and pinned his arms. And the leopard had but a short sword he had plucked as he leaped, and not his own sword, and he was helpless.
Each man thus fell upon his enemy, and the room was full of cries and curses and struggling men, and no trusty man looked to see what any other did until he had killed the one appointed to him. But some robbers were easily killed because they were fumbling and drunken, and as each trusty man killed his enemy, he went to Wong the Tiger to see how he did and to help him. Now the leopard was no mean enemy, and although he was half drunken, he was so swift with his flying feet and he could kick and fence so well that Wong the Tiger could not end him with a single sword thrust. But he would not have help, for he wanted this glory and he struggled with the leopard. And indeed, when he saw how bravely this man fought and how desperately with only the poor weapon he had snatched, Wong the Tiger was moved to admiration, as a brave man is even against a foe if he be brave also, and he was sorry he must kill the man. But still he must, and so he drove the leopard into a corner with his flying sword, and the man was too full-fed and too drunken to do his best. Moreover, it was hopeless for the leopard, who had taught himself all he knew, and Wong the Tiger had been taught in an army, and he knew the skill of weapons and every sort of feint and posture. The moment came then when the leopard could not defend himself quickly enough, and Wong the Tiger drove his sword into the man's vitals and twisted it strongly once, and blood and water rushed out. But as the leopard sank and died, he gave Wong the Tiger such a look that Wong the Tiger never did forget it his whole life long, it was so wild and fierce. And the man did indeed look like a leopard, for his eyes were not black as are the eyes of common mortals, but they were pale and yellow as amber. When Wong the Tiger saw him still at last, and lying dead, and his yellow eyes staring, he said to himself that this was a true leopard, for besides his eyes, his head was wide at the top and sloped back in the strangest, beast-like way. The trusty men gathered then to praise their captain, but Wong the Tiger held his bloody sword, forgetful of it, and he stared down at the dead man still, and he said, sorrowfully, "I wish I need not have killed him, for he was a fierce, brave man, and he had the look of a hero in his eyes." But even as he stood and looked sadly at what he had had to do, the pig butcher shouted out that the leopard's heart was not yet cold, and before any knew what he was about, he had stretched out his hand and taken a bowl from the table, and with the swift, delicate skill that was lodged so curiously in his coarse hand, he cut a stroke into the leopard's left breast, and he pinched the ribs together, and the leopard's heart leaped out of the cleft, and the pig butcher caught it in the bowl. It was true the heart was not cold, and it quivered a time or two there in the bowl, and the pig butcher stretched out the bowl in his hand to Wong the Tiger, and he called out in a loud, merry way, "Take it and eat it, my captain, for from old times it has been said the heart of a brave foe eaten warm makes one's own heart twice as brave." But Wong the Tiger would not. He turned away and he said, haughtily, "I do not need it." And his eye fell on the floor near the chair where the leopard had sat to feast, and he saw the leopard's sword glittering there. He went and picked it up. It was a fine steel sword, such as cannot be made this day, so keen that it could cut through a bolt of silk, and so cold it could divide a cloud in two. Wong the Tiger tried it upon the robe of a robber who lay dead there, and it melted through to the man's bone even before he pressed it at all. And Wong the Tiger said, "This sword alone will I take for my share. I have never seen a sword like this." Just then he heard a gagging noise, and it was his pocked lad who had stood staring at the pig butcher, and he was suddenly sick and vomited at what he saw. And Wong the Tiger, hearing it, said kindly, for he knew it was the first time the lad had seen men killed, "You have done well not to be sick before this. Go out into the cool court." But the lad would not, and he stood his ground sturdily, and Wong the Tiger was pleased at this, and he said, "If I am a tiger, you are fit to be a tiger's cub, I swear." And the lad was so pleased he grinned, and his teeth shone out of his white, sick face. When Wong the Tiger had thus done what he promised he would, he went out into the court to see what his men had done with the lesser robbers. It was a cloudy, dark night, and the shapes of his men were but a little more solid and dark than the night. They waited, and he commanded that torches be lit, and when they were flaring he saw that only a few men lay dead, and he was pleased, for he had commanded that men were not to be wantonly killed, and that they were to have the chance to choose if they would change their banner or not, if they were brave. But Wong the Tiger's work was not yet done. He was determined to storm the lair now that it was weakest, and before the robbers who were left had any time to reinforce themselves. He did not stay even to see the old magistrate, but he sent word saying, "I will not claim a reward until I have stamped out this nest of snakes." And he called to his men, and they went through the dark night across the fields to the Double Dragon Mountain. Now Wong the Tiger's men did not follow him very willingly, for they had fought already this night, and the march was a good 3 miles or so, and they must perhaps fight again, and many of them had hoped to be allowed to loot in the city as a reward for their battle. They complained to him then, saying, "We fought for you, and we risked our lives, and you have not let us take any booty either. We have never served under so hard a master, for we have never heard that soldiers must fight and have no booty. No, and not so much as touch a maid either, and we have held ourselves off until we fought for you, and still you give us no freedom." At first Wong the Tiger would not answer this, but he could not bear it when he heard several of them muttering together, and he knew we must be cruel and hard or they would betray him. So he turned on them and slashed his fine sword whistling through the air, and he roared at them, "I have killed the leopard, and I will kill any and all of you, and care nothing. Do you have no wisdom at all? Can we despoil the very place which we hope to be ours, and turn the people against us with hatred the very first night? No more of these cursed words. When we come to the lair, you may loot anything and take it all, except that you are not to force a woman against her will." Then his men were cowed, and one said timidly, "But, Captain, we were only joking." And another said, half wondering, "But, Captain, it was not I who complained, and if we do loot the lair, where are we to live? For I thought we were to have the lair." Then Wong the Tiger answered sullenly, for he was still angry, "We are no robber band, and I am no common robber chief. I have a better plan, if you will but trust me and not be fools. That lair shall be burned to the ground, and the curse of those robbers shall pass from this countryside, so that men need fear them no more." Then his men were more astonished than ever, even his trusty men, and they said, one speaking for all, "But what shall we be then?" "We shall be men of battle, but not robbers," answered Wong the Tiger very harshly. "We will have no lair. We shall live in the city and in the magistrate's own courts, and we shall be his private army, and we need fear no one, for we shall be under the name of the state." Then the men fell silent in very awe of the cleverness of this leader of theirs, and their evil humor passed from them like a wind. They laughed aloud, and they trusted to him, and they mounted the steps eagerly that led to the pass to the lair. And about them the fogs wreathed and curled in these mountains, and their torches smoked in the cold mists. They came suddenly to the mouth of the pass, and a guard was there, so astonished he could not run. And one of the men, being very merry, ran him through with his sword before he could speak. Wong the Tiger saw this, but he did not reprove his man for once, because it was but one he killed. And it is true that a captain cannot hold ignorant and wild men too closely in check, lest they turn and rend him. So he let the man lie dead, and they went on to the gates of the lair. Now this lair was indeed like a village, and it had a wall of rock hewn out of the mountain and welded together with clay and lime, so that it was very strong, and there were great iron-bound gates set into the wall. Wong the Tiger beat upon those gates, but they were locked fast and strong, and no answer came. When he beat again and still no answer came, he knew that those within had heard of what had befallen their leader, and doubtless some of the robbers had run back and warned the others, and either they had fled from the lair or they had entrenched themselves within the houses and prepared for attack. Then Wong the Tiger bade his men prepare fresh torches out of the dried autumn grass that was about the lair, and they set fire to these torches of twisted grass, and they burned a hole in the wooden part of one of the gates. And when the hole was big enough, one slipped through it and unbarred the gate swiftly. They all went in then, and Wong the Tiger led the way. But the lair was as still as death. Wong the Tiger stood to listen, and there was not a sound. Then he gave the command that every man was to blow his torch to flame, and the houses were to be set on fire. Every man ran to the task, and they yelled and screeched as the thatched roofs of the houses caught fire, and as the whole lair began to burn suddenly, people began to run out of the houses as ants will run out of a hill. Men, women, and little children streamed out, and they ran cowering here and there, and Wong the Tiger's men began to stab them as they ran, until Wong the Tiger shouted that they were to be allowed to escape, but that the men might go in and take their goods. So Wong the Tiger's men rushed into such houses as were not too ablaze, and they began to drag out booty of silken pieces and yards of cloth and garments and anything they could carry. Some found gold and silver, and some found jars of wine and food,
and they began to eat and drink gluttonously, and some in their eagerness perished in the very flames they themselves had lit. Then Wong the Tiger, seeing how childish they were, sent his trusty men to see that they did not come to harm, and so not many perished. As for Wong the Tiger, he stood apart and watched it all, and he kept his brother Sun near him, and he would not let the lad loot anything. He said,
"No, lad, we are not robbers, and you are my own blood, and we do not rob. These are common ignorant fellows, and I must let them have their way once in a time, or they will not serve me loyally, and it is better to let them loose here. I must use them for my tools. They are my means to greatness, but you are not like them."
So he kept the lad by him, and it was very well he did, for the strangest thing happened. As Wong the Tiger stood there leaning on his gun and watching the flaming houses that were beginning already to smoke and to smolder, the lad suddenly gave a great scream. Wong the Tiger whirled, and he saw from above a sword descending down upon him. Instantly he lifted his sword up and met it, and the blade slipped down the smooth sword, and it fell a little on his hand, but so little it was scarcely a wound, and fell to the ground. But Wong the Tiger leaped into the darkness, swifter than a tiger, and he laid hold on someone, and he dragged it out into the light of the fires, and it was a woman. He stood there, confounded, holding her by the arm he had caught, and the lad cried out, "It is the woman I saw drinking with the leopard!" But before Wong the Tiger could say a word, the woman had twisted and writhed and turned herself, and when she found he held her fast and beyond her strength to free herself, she threw back her head and she spat full into Wong the Tiger's eyes. Now he had never had such a thing happen to him before, and it was such a filthy, hateful thing that he lifted his hand and slapped her upon the cheek as one slaps a willful child, and his hard hand left the marks of his fingers there purple upon her cheek, and he shouted,
"That for you, you tigress!"
This he said without thinking what he said, and she shouted back at him viciously, "I wish I had killed you, you accursed! I meant to kill you!" And he said grimly, holding her fast still,
"Well, I know you did, and if it had not been for my pocked lad here, I would have lain dead this instant with my skull cleft."
And he called to some of his men to bring a rope from somewhere, and bind her, and they bound her to a tree there by the gate, until he could know what to do with her. Now they bound her very tightly, and she struggled and chafed and cut her flesh, but she could not so much as loosen herself. And as she struggled, she cursed them all, and especially Wong the Tiger, with such curses as are seldom heard anywhere, they are so rich and vile. Wong the Tiger stood and watched while the men bound her, and when she was safely tied and tight, and the men had gone to their pleasure again, he walked back and forth then in front of her, and every time he passed, he looked at her. Each time he looked more steadfastly and with more wonder, and he saw she was young, and that she had a hard, bright, beautiful face, her lips thin and red, and her forehead high and smooth, and her eyes bright and sharp and angry. It was a face narrow and bright as a fox's face. Yes, it was beautiful. Even now, when she had it twisted with hate for him every time he passed her, and each time he passed, she cursed him and spat at him. But he paid no heed to her. He only stared at her as he went in his silent way, and after a time, as the night wore on to dawn, she grew weary, for they had tied her so tightly that she was in much pain, and at last she could not bear it. At first she did not curse and only spat, and after a while she suffered, so she did not spit either, and at last she said, panting and licking her lips, "Loosen me, even a little, for I am in such pain." But Wong the Tiger did not heed this either, and he only smiled hardly, for he thought it was a trick of hers. She begged him thus every time he came near her, but he would not answer. At last, one time he came past, and her head hung down, and she was silent. Still he would not go near her, for he would not be spit on again, and he thought she feigned sleep or faintness. But when she did not move for several times he passed, he sent the lad to her, and the lad went and took her by the chin and turned her face up, and it was true, she had fainted. Then Wong the Tiger went to her, and he looked at her closely, and he saw that she was fairer than he had ever seen her to be in the dim and flickering light of dying fires. She was not more than 25, and she did not look like a common farmer's daughter or a common woman, and he could not but wonder who she was, and how she came to be here, and where the leopard had found such a one. He called a soldier then to come and cut her down, and he had her trussed still, but more lightly, and not hung against a tree. He bade them lay her on the ground, and there she lay. and she did not come to herself until it was dawn, and the sunlight was beginning to creep through the morning mists. Then at this hour Wong the Tiger called his men, and he said,
"The time is up. We have other things to do than this."
His men ceased their quarreling over booty slowly, and they gathered at his call, for he made his voice very loud and fierce, and he held his gun cocked and ready for any who would not obey him. And he said, when his men were come,
"Collect every gun and all the ammunition there is, for these are mine. I claim these as my share."
When his men had done this, Wong the Tiger counted the guns, and there were 120 guns, and a goodly amount of ammunition, too. But some of the guns were old and rusty and of little value, and these Wong the Tiger, because they were of such ancient and clumsy design, kept to one side to throw away as soon as he could find better. Then, in the midst of the ruined and smoking lair, his men tied their booty into bundles, some large and some small, and Wong the Tiger counted over the guns they had found, and these he gave to the more trustworthy men to guard. At last he turned to the woman who was tied. She had come to herself, and she lay on the ground, her eyes open. When Wong the Tiger looked at her, she stared back at him angrily, and he said to her harshly,
"Who are you, and where is your home, that I may send you there?"
But she would not answer him one word. She spat at him for answer, and her face was like an angry cat's. This enraged Wong the Tiger greatly, so he called out to two of his men,
"Put a pole through her bonds, and carry her to the magistrate's court, and throw her into the jail there. Perhaps she will tell then who she is."
The men obeyed him, and they thrust the pole ruthlessly through the ropes and carried the ends of the pole on their shoulders, and she swung there. As for Wong the Tiger, when all was ready, the sun was clear of the mountain tops, and he walked ahead of his men down the pass. From the lair a feeble cloud of smoke still rose, but Wong the Tiger did not turn to look at it once. Thus they marched along the road through the country to the city once more. Many a man passing this strange throng looked cornerwise out of his eyes, and especially at the woman trussed to the pole, her head hanging down and her fox-like face pale as ashes. Every man wondered, but not one dared to ask of what had happened, lest he be drawn into some desperate brawl or other. And they were afraid, and each went about his business and kept his eyes down after he had glanced a time or two. It was full day, and the sun was streaming over the fields, when at last Wong the Tiger and his men reached the city gates. But when he was in the darkness of the passage through the city wall, his hair-lipped trusty man came and led him aside behind a tree that stood there by the gate, and he whispered to Wong the Tiger, hissing with the earnestness of what he had to say,
"I have this to say that I must say, my captain. It is better not to have anything to do with this woman. She has a fox's face and fox eyes, and women like this are only half human and the other half fox, and they have a very magic wickedness. Let me put my knife in her deeply, and so end her."
Now Wong the Tiger had very often heard the tales of things that women who are half fox will do, but he was so bold and fearless in himself that he laughed loudly now, and he said,
"I am afraid of no man, and no spirit, and this is only a woman."
And he brushed the man away and went to the head of his throng again. But the hair-lipped, trusty man followed behind him, muttering. And he muttered,
"But this is a woman, and more evil than a man. And she is a fox, and more evil than a woman."
Chapter 14. When Wong the Tiger came into the same courts where the night before he had done such a deed, and his men followed after him with haphazard steps because they were so weary, they found those courts cleaned and all as they had been before. All the dead had been taken away, and the blood wiped and washed away with water. Every guard and servant stood in his place, and they were frightened and careful when Wong the Tiger came through the gates. And he came as arrogant as a king, and everyone hastened to make obeisance before him. But he held himself straight and haughty, and he strode through the courts and the halls, pride magnificent upon his dark face. Well he knew he held this whole region now in the hollow of his hand. He turned to a guard who stood there, and he shouted,
"Take this trussed woman and put her somewhere in the court jail. Guard her and see that she is fed and not treated ill, for she is my prisoner, and when I wish I will decide what her punishment is to be."
He stood and watched then while the men carried her away on the pole. She was exhausted, and her face was as white as tallow. Even her lips that had been so red were white now, too, and her eyes were as black as inkstones in her paleness, and she gasped for her every breath. But she still could turn those great, fierce black eyes to Wong the Tiger, and when she saw him watch her, she twisted her face in a grimace against him, but her mouth was dry. And Wong the Tiger was astounded, for he had never seen such a woman as this, and he puzzled what he would ever do with her, for she never could be let go free so full of hatred as this, and so strong in her revengefulness. But he put the matter from him for this while, and he went in before the old magistrate. Now the old magistrate had been waiting since before dawn, and he sat there in his full robes, and he had ordered foods prepared of the finest kind. When he saw Wong the Tiger come in, he was all of a twitter and in great confusion, because though he was grateful for what Wong the Tiger had done, yet he knew such a man would not serve another for nothing, and he dreaded to hear what reward Wong the Tiger would ask, lest it be so great that he was more burdened than he had been by the leopard. So he waited in dreadful uncertainty, and when it was announced to him that Wong the Tiger was come, and when he saw Wong the Tiger come in, and with the great measured strides such as a hero uses, the old magistrate was so confused with his fears that he did not know what to do with his hands and feet, and without his knowing it, they trembled and moved as though they had a life of their own apart from him. But he invited Wong the Tiger to be seated, and Wong the Tiger made the proper courteous replies. And when the rites of courtesy were over, and Wong the Tiger had bowed and bowed, but not too deeply either, the old magistrate had ordered tea and wines and meats to be brought. They sat down at last, and they made a little idle talk. But the moment came when the thing that had been done could not be avoided longer, and looking east and west and gazing every which way except at Wong the Tiger, the old magistrate opened his mouth to speak. Nor did Wong the Tiger help him, for the power was now his, and he knew very well the condition in the old magistrate's heart, and he did no more than fix his steadfast eyes on the nervous old man, because he knew he frightened him thus, and the knowledge gave pleasure to Wong the Tiger because of the malice in him. At last the old magistrate began in his hurried, feeble old voice, very soft and whispering and low.
"Be sure I never can forget what you did last night, and I can never thank you enough that I am rid of the pest under which I have suffered all these years, and my old age can be peaceful now. And what shall I say to you who have delivered me? And how shall I reward you, who are more to me than a son? And how reward your noble men? Ask what you will, even to my very seat, and it is yours."
And he waited, trembling and biting his forefinger. Wong the Tiger sat calm and waiting until the old magistrate was done, and then he replied decently,
"I do not ask anything at all. From my youth I have been against all wicked and evil men, and what I did to rid the people from a pest."
Then he sat silent and waited again. And now it was the magistrate's turn, and he said,
"You have the heart of a hero, and I did not dream there were such as you in these days. But still, I cannot close my eyes in peace, even when I am dead, if I do not give you thanks in some certain way. And so speak, and say what will please you best."
Thus they talked back and forth, and with each speech spoken in turn, and very properly and courteously, they came nearer to the point at last. And then Wong the Tiger made it known in winding words that he was minded to open the ranks of his men to all of the leopard's old followers who wished to change their banner. At this, the old magistrate was filled with fright, and he grasped the sides of his carved chair, and he rose to his feet and said,
"But are you minded to be a robber chief in his place, then?"
And to himself he said that if this were so, then he was undone indeed, for this strange, tall, black-browed fellow, who had come to him from nowhere, was fiercer to see than even the leopard had been, and he was more clever. At least the leopard had been known to all, and it was known how much he would demand, and thinking thus the old magistrate began to groan aloud a little without knowing that he did. But Wong the Tiger spoke out straightly, and he said,
"You need not fear. I have no mind to be a robber. My father was an honorable man who owned land, and I have my own inheritance from him. I am not poor, so that I need to rob for anything. Moreover, my two older brothers are rich and proper men. If I carve out my future way to greatness, it will be by my own skill at war, and by no such low trickery as robbers use. No, this is my reward, and all I ask of you. Let me stay here with my men in your courts, and appoint me as your own chief general in your army you have here. I and my men will come as part of your retinue, and I will protect you from robbers, and I will protect your people also. You can feed us, and give us certain revenues that are our due, and you can give me the shelter of the name of the state."
Now the old magistrate listened to this in bewilderment, and he said feebly, "But what shall I do with the general I have already? I shall be torn between you. for he will not go down lightly from his post." To this Wong the Tiger made brave answer,
"Let us fight it out as honorable men do, and if he wins, I will go away and let him have my men and my guns. If I win, he is to go away and leave me his."
Then the magistrate, groaning and sighing, for he was a scholar and a follower of sages, and he loved peace, sent out and called for his general to come in. And after a while the man came, a little pompous, round-bellied man who wore war garments of a foreign sort, and he grew a little sparse beard, and he brushed his scanty eyebrows up, and did his little best to look fierce and brave. He dragged a long sword at his heels as he came in, and he came stamping his feet down hard at each step. When he bowed from his waist, and he tried to be very ferocious. Then, halting and sweating, the old magistrate somehow made known to him what the matter was, and Wong the Tiger sat there coldly, and he looked away and seemed to think of other things. At last, the old magistrate was silent, and he hung his head, and he wished himself dead, and he thought to himself that he would soon be dead between these two, for he had always thought his own general fierce enough, since the man had a hot, swift little temper of his own. But Wong the Tiger was far swifter and deeper in his anger, as any man could see who looked at that face of his. Now the little pot-bellied general was angry enough at what he heard, and he had laid his little fat hand on his sword and made as though he would dart at Wong the Tiger. But Wong the Tiger saw the movement almost before it was made, although at the time he had been staring seemingly into the peony terrace in the court, and he drew his wide lips back from his white teeth and pulled down his heavy black brows, and folded his arms across his breast, and he stared so heavily at the little general and with such a dire look that the little man faltered and thought better of what he did, and swallowed his anger as best he could. And indeed, he was not a fool. He saw his day was over, for he did not dare to measure himself against Wong the Tiger. He said at last to the old magistrate,
"I have thought for a long time that I ought to return to my old father, for I am his only son, and he grows very old. But I have never been free to go because my duties here at your honored court have been so arduous and continuous. Besides this filial duty that is mine, there is the illness in my belly, which seizes me every now and again. You know of this illness, my lord, and how because of it I have not been able to go as I have so longed to do against those robbers, and all these years I have chafed at my inability which heaven itself put upon me. So now I gladly retire to my old village home, to do what I should for my old father, and to nurse also my increasing illness." This he said, and he bowed very stiffly, and the old magistrate rose and bowed also, and he murmured,
"Be sure you shall be well rewarded for all your faithful years."
And the magistrate looked after the old general regretfully as he withdrew, and he sighed, and he thought to himself that after all he had been a very easy man of war, and if he had not put down the robbers, still, he was not hard to have in the courts except when his little tempers flew up over some small question of meat and drink, and these were easily settled. And then the old magistrate stole a look at Wong the Tiger, and he was very ill at ease because Wong the Tiger looked young and harsh and very fierce and ill-tempered. But he only said in his peaceable way,
"Now you have the reward you wish. You may have the courts the old general had as soon as he is gone, and you may take the soldiers. But there is one thing more. What shall I say to those above me when it is known I have changed my general? And what even if the old general goes to complain of me?"
But Wong the Tiger was clever, and he answered at once,
"It will all bring glory to you. Tell them you hired a brave, and he put down the robbers, and you have retained the brave as a private guard. Then do you force the general, and I will put my force behind yours, to write and ask that he be allowed to retire, and he must name me in his place. And so shall the glory be yours, that you hired me, and through me you routed the robbers."
Then, although unwillingly, the old magistrate saw that this was no mean plan, and he began to be somewhat cheered, except that he was still afraid of Wong the Tiger, and he feared his ruthlessness, lest it ever be turned against himself. But Wong the Tiger let him be afraid, for this suited him, and he smiled his cold smile. Now did Wong the Tiger settle himself into those courts, for the winter was come down out of the north. He was well pleased with all he had done, for his men were fed and clothed, and his revenues began to come in, and he could buy them winter garments, and they were all warm and fed. When he had arranged everything for them, and the deep of the winter drew on, and the days passed each other in regular procession, Wong the Tiger bethought himself suddenly one idle day of the woman he still had in the jail. He smiled to himself harshly when he thought of her, and he shouted to the guard at his door,
"Go and fetch that woman out of the jail I sent there some 60 days or so ago. I had forgot that I have not fixed her punishment, and she tried to kill me."
Then he laughed silently and said again,
"She is tamed by now, I dare swear."
So he waited in some pleasure and interest to see how tamed she would be. He sat alone in a hall of his own, and beside him was a large iron brazier of coals. Outside, the snow of deep winter fell heavily, and the court was filled with the snow, and it hung thickly on every branch and tree, for there was no wind on that day, only a very bitter, silent cold, frozen with the dampness of the falling snow. But Wong the Tiger waited idle and warm beside the brazier of coals, and he was wrapped well in a sheepskin robe, and a tiger skin was thrown across the back of his chair to keep the chill away. It was nearly an hour before he heard a commotion in the silent court, and he looked toward the door. The guard was coming with his prisoner, but he had two other guards to help him. Even so, she twisted this way and that, and she strained against the ropes that bound her. But the guards forced her into the door, and in the struggling the snow swept in with them. When they had her fast at last and standing before Wong the Tiger, the guard said in apology,
"General, forgive me, because so long a time has passed before I could obey your command. But we have had to force this young hag every step. She lay naked in her bed in the jail, and we could not go in for decency's sake, for we are respectable men with wives of our own. And so the other women in the jail had to force her clothes upon her. She bit and scratched and fought against them, but at last they had enough on her so that we could go in and tie her and drag her out. It must be she is mad. We have never seen a woman like this. There are those in the jail who say even that she is not a woman but a fox, changed into a woman for some evil purpose of the devil's." But the young woman shook back her streaming hair when she heard this. Her hair had been cut short once, but now it was grown nearly to her shoulders. She screamed forth, "I am not mad, unless it be with hate against him." And she cursed, and she thrust her chin out at Wong the Tiger, and she spat at him, and would have spat on him except that he drew back hastily, and the guard, seeing her purpose, jerked her back so that her spittle fell hissing upon the hot coals of the brazier. At this the guard stared, and he said again with conviction,
"You see she is mad, my general."
But Wong the Tiger said nothing. He only fastened his eyes on this strange, wild creature, and he listened to her speech, for even when she cursed it was not the speech of a common or ignorant woman. He looked at her closely, and he saw that although she was slender and now gaunt to thinness, she was still handsome and haughty, and she did not look like a thick country wench. Yet her feet were big, and they looked as though they had never been bound, and this was not as it should be in those parts for a woman who came from a good family. He could make nothing of her, therefore, with all these contradictions, and he only stared on at her and watched her fine black brows twisting above her angry eyes and her thin pouting lips drawn back from her smooth white teeth. And as he watched, it came to him that she was the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. Yes, even with her face pale and pinched and angry, she was beautiful. So at last he said slowly,
"I have never known you at all. Why should you hate me?"
And the woman answered passionately, and she had a clear, piercing voice, "You killed my lord, and I will not rest until I have revenged him. Though you kill me, I will hold my dead eyes open until I am revenged for him." To this the guard was horrified, and he lifted his sword, and he cried, outraged,
"To whom do you speak, vixen?"
And he would have smote her across the mouth with the flat of his sword, except that Wong the Tiger made a sign that she was not to be touched. Then Wong the Tiger said in his still way,
"Was the leopard your master?"
And she cried in the same piercing, passionate voice, "Yes." Then Wong the Tiger leaned forward indolently, and he said quietly and very scornfully,
"I have killed him. Now you have a new master, and it is I."
At this the young woman lunged forward as if she would have fallen upon him and killed him if she could, and the two guards struggled with her, and Wong the Tiger watched them. When they had her fast again so she could not move, the sweat poured down her temples, and she was gasping and half-weeping. But she stood and fixed her furious eyes on Wong the Tiger's face. Then he met her eyes and stared at her, and she stared back at him in defiance, and as though she did not fear him,